what we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org. Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Thursday, March the 27th, 2025. And in studio with me today is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim, and I apologize.
How's that?
Well, I didn't get the memo. I don't think you got the memo either.
What's that? What did I do wrong? Did I dress wrong?
It's Chris and Ed.
Oh, Chris.
Oh, with Green.
Chris Woodward. Good morning, Brother Chris. Yeah,
they're Twinkies.
Yeah.
You know, I never have liked the word Twinkies.
I don't know, Fred. That sounds
okay. Eating a Twinkie is one thing.
Yes.
I'm in favor of that.
Right.
But calling me, calling Chris and me Twinkies is...
Can I tell people what's going on?
Yeah.
I know there are millions watching on our video.
Millions.
Just for the eye candy that we are.
But
Chris and Ed are wearing the same shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One time, Fred and I wore the same pullover jacket. So
they're green with our American Family Association logo
when
on.
I'm on next Tuesday. Let me know what you're wearing and all.
Okay. Well, these, the word, Fred, I wouldn't have gone with Twinkies.
Twinkies.
Okay.
Cannolis.
But no.
About to leave the show.
That is what you call people who.
Yeah.
I don't know if I hope and Chris didn't text each other this morning.
No.
What are you wearing? I don't know. What are you wearing?
I assure you, I did.
Anyway, but Twinkies does sound a little feminine.
Oh, okay.
I would back off that one. So.
Hey, before we get started,
we're already started.
Yeah. I mean, before we
it's
get
going
started,
uphill from here.
Before we get started on the important news of the day, despite the Twinkie comment. Fred, I do want to applaud you and let our listeners know. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but Fred played hockey in high school. Did you play in college?
Gordon College. In just north of Boston there.
Tell our listeners about the call you got, if you don't mind, and the fact that your high school team's going to be in the...
Let him tell it.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I played hockey high school back in the early 70s. And I obviously lost contact with my fellow players on the team for decades.
High school and in college.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. So I got a voicemail when I came into work the other day. I had a voicemail, and a guy introduced himself, and he said, "Just wanted to let you know that I didn't know there was a Hockey Hall of Fame in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia." But that our high school team is being inducted into that Hockey Hall of Fame there in Cape Breton. So that came as quite a shock. So I had a long conversation with this gentleman yesterday and got caught up in some of the players.
Are you going back for the ceremony?
There's going to be a follow-up call with details about this. So we'll see when that is. Yeah.
Well,
kind of neat.
I think that's special. You know.
Absolutely.
I know it's not a National Hall of Fame, but that's quite an honor.
Yes.
So in Nova Scotia. You...
Mm-hmm. Well, hockey, you know this. Hockey is big. There is an AHL team in...
Hockey's like football in America, am I right?
It is, very much so. You know, people ask me, do you remember the first time you put skates on? And I honestly, I don't.
Yeah.
You're that young.
That young. You know, it just happens. That's the way it is.
I remember the one and only time I put skates on.
Was it a good thing?
Actually, I know nobody cares about this, but I'll tell it anyway. In the winter of 1976, we were living in South Haven, Mississippi, which is just a suburb of Memphis.
Well,
that would probably offend people who live there. We're not a suburb. Anyway, a community south of Memphis over the state line. But my dad was pastoring.
Okay.
But it got so cold that, which is unusual, and that a lake froze almost solid.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was, if you go back and look at the people who lived through that, you remember in the mid-70s, there was some absolutely frigid winters across the country.
That's when they were. That's when they were predicting a new ice age.
Yes, you remember the Ohio River froze.
Yeah,
J.J. Jasper, who lived in Owensboro, Kentucky, talks about taking a.
Yeah,
I think he talked about taking a truck out there or something like that. I wouldn't advise that.
No,
but anyway, well, maybe he just saw people doing that. Yeah. It was. Some way or another, I came across some. Some ice skates. They weren't new. They were like used or something.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody from the north moved down and we bought them at a
garage sale
or something like that. Anyway, put those dudes on and went out there and
skated
around there on the pond
with your ankles turned in.
You know,
turned out.
I don't know. You know what? I don't think anybody was watching me. I could have drowned.
Do that back in the day.
This is back before people cared about safety, I guess.
Yeah.
Kids just did things crazy like that. But anyway, I just remember that. But congratulations to you, Fred.
Well, yeah, I just thought that was an honor. I just wanted to mention
it. Like I said, I didn't realize there was a Hockey Hall of Fame there in my home area. So it's kind of neat. I'll keep you guys up to date.
Okay, yeah, and if you do go back, we want pictures.
Absolutely.
Or it didn't happen.
Okay, therefore.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Chris, what is our first story?
Well, we begin with developing news out of Prince William County, Virginia, where this morning FBI Director Kash Patel, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and many others in the Trump administration announced the arrest of an illegal immigrant and top MS-13 leader for the Eastern Coast. I've got some audio here from various people. Let's begin with this one. It's Attorney General Pam Bondi, clip two.
He was one of the top members, top three in the entire country, head of the East Coast, one of the three leaders, and I will say very violent crimes. Very anything you can associate with MS-13, he was the leader over it. All of the violent crimes. So he's very dangerous. He should not have been in this country. He's from El Salvador. And he was recruited at a very early age. Very early age. And it rose to the leadership. And you have to be bad. You have to be tough to get there. But he is no longer tough because he is behind bars.
Now, this was part of a broader operation in Virginia that has actually nabbed more than 340 criminals in the past month alone, just in Virginia, one area of Virginia.
So this is the new Justice Department and FBI at work doing what we always thought of them as doing.
It's not the Injustice Department.
Yes. And so instead of going after grandmas, you know, or moms showing up at school board meetings or people peacefully praying outside of abortion clinics, they're going after real criminals. This is what we always thought the Justice Department and the FBI did. And so the Trump administration has turned over a new leaf.
Hey, this guy was 24 years old. That's stunning.
Yeah.
That he was, and for those who don't know, MS-13, is it Central American or Mexican?
No, I think it's El Salvadoran.
They're a gang like the Bloods and the Crips. Remember those names?
Right.
MS-13, and they are one of the more violent criminal gangs, and they're in the U.S. and so this is a big deal to arrest the one of the top leaders.
Yes.
So MS stands for Mara Salvatrucha, you're right. It is not just an El Salvadoran gang anymore. It originated there, but it's international.
It was very interesting. Governor of Virginia Glenn Youngkin was at this news conference announcing this morning, and he said this couldn't have happened back several months ago when Biden was still in control. He said the task force that carried out this operation this morning just came into being since Donald Trump became president again, and in fact was just formed in the last month. And that is why for this takedown this morning, Attorney General Bondi and the head of the FBI, Kash Patel, were in what looks like a trailer nearby, and there were cameras everywhere. They were able to watch this go down. And Pam Bondi says, you know, it was state people involved with this, obviously federal people, and even local police. And Kash Patel had high praise for the local police, saying that they are going to be able to work with the feds to take these bad guys down.
Mm-hmm. Well, part one of the main commitments slash promises that then candidate Donald Trump made to the voters was a crackdown on violent gangs in America.
Yeah.
Especially those that are, you know, well, any violent gang, but he's talking the foreign-based gangs that are operating inside the United States. He promised to go after them. And this is one of the achievement.
It is
in that regard.
By the way, I mispronounced the name. It's Mara Salvatrucha.
I knew you did that, but Trucha. I didn't want to point it out.
Yes, that's my apologies.
That's okay. I think most people would probably mispronounce that, but
I'd Mississippiize it. You know.
Pardon me?
I would say it like I think it is.
Mara Salvatrucha.
That's over there by Itabena.
All right. Anyway, that's big news out of the Washington, D.C. area, because this fellow was arrested in Northern Virginia, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, to go with this, the Trump administration is intent on getting rid of bad guys. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem herself paid a visit to a prison in El Salvador, where we have sent many illegal immigrants apprehended in the U.S., and we've got some audio of her sharing a message to anybody else that's here illegally. Clip four. Clip three.
If you come to our country illegally, this is one of the consequences you could face. First of all, do not come to our country illegally. You will be removed and you will be prosecuted. But know that this facility is one of the tools in our toolkit that we will use if you commit crimes against the American people.
We have this story on our website, AFN.net.
Well, listen, applause to the Trump DOJ, Pam Bondi and Kash Patel. For
Kristi Noem, what's her title?
DHS Secretary.
Department of Homeland Security.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, Ed.
We have noted for the 4 years of the Biden administration, when the Department of Justice and the FBI, let's just put it mildly, were misbehaving, okay, we always pointed out that our suspicion was that a lot of the rank and file FBI members were probably as aghast as the rest of us were at the misuse of power and the misuse of authority in the Biden Department of Justice. So I look forward to the day when the FBI's reputation is restored by it fulfilling its proper role under the Trump administration.
Just want to mention, if you go to our website, AFN.net, we have a video of Kristi Noem that was taken yesterday. Has she stood in front of the cells containing dozens of these criminals from El Salvador? They were taken to a prison, El Salvador. Some of them are from Venezuela. But it's worth going to look at this, and that's where she recorded this yesterday. And basically, she's trying to send a signal to anybody else in this country who may be part of these gangs. This is where you're going to end up.
Right.
It is not very nice. It is not like some of the medium custody prisons that we have in this country with color TV and
right.
everything else. These prison cells have racks in them. These people are in these cells for 23 and a half hours a day. There are no mattresses on these racks. This is a horrible place.
Yeah, it's got a reputation.
Yes.
A prison
yes.
in El Salvador. So, yeah, this, listen. I hope that a lot of these gang members will self-deport.
Yeah.
I hope that is part of the...
That's the reason they're doing this.
Yeah. I hope this is part of the fallout of what they're doing so that these people can go back to their own country and deal with the law enforcement there.
Meanwhile, a federal appeals court has refused to lift an order barring the Trump administration from deporting Venezuelan illegals deemed to be a threat to Americans. This was a split three-judge panel yesterday at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, which upheld a March 15th order temporarily prohibiting deportations under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. Yeah. They're now going to challenge this to higher powers, that being either the full D.C. Circuit and what's called an en banc hearing, or they're just going to go directly to the U.S. Supreme Court and hope to get a ruling in their favor.
Yeah, and this is also, by the way, an article that appears on American Family News, AFN.net. Folks, do encourage you to check out AFN.net to get a lot of the latest of the news stories. I don't think it matters if this goes to the full panel of the D.C. Appeals Court. I think this is going to wind up at the Supreme Court, because this is, frankly, let me just say this. I was going to say this is an abuse of judicial authority. I mentioned this, today's Thursday. I think I mentioned this yesterday or Monday. I agree with what the Trump administration is doing in deporting these individuals, okay? No, I don't want anyone to doubt that. But you can run into procedural issues doing it this quickly. And I think that some federal judges are going to try to hang their rulings on procedural grounds. But I think the Supreme Court has to step in and say, first of all, a district judge cannot stop a nationwide
federal judge cannot issue a national
injunction. Yeah, I hope. I hope the Supreme Court clarifies the fact that the executive branch has authority to execute its constitutional duties, and judges can't get in the way of that. Unless there's a clear constitutional issue involved, it seems to me that if people are here in the country illegally, you may have some procedural protections, but you can't stop the executive branch from saying, we don't like what you're doing, and you've already broken the law to get in here, you're leaving. I don't know what the issue is here with these judges.
Very interesting. Pardon me. There was another appeals court decision. This, the Ninth Circuit, late yesterday. This has to do with Trump's firing of 16,000 probationary federal workers. Same thing again. Clinton-appointed judge says, no, you can't do that to Donald Trump and his administration. Went to the Ninth Circuit, split decision, but it goes in favor of that lower court judge. In both cases now, I was reading this morning where the Trump administration is now going to the United States Supreme Court on both of those issues, with the argument that you just articulated, that we have a right to do these things.
Yes.
So it's going to land in Chief Justice John Roberts' court.
Well, it needs to, and it needs to soon. The Supreme Court of the United States needs to rule on this, because if they rule with these liberal lower-level courts, lower under the Supreme Court, if they were to rule with them, you got real problems that you will basically neuter the executive branch's ability to control our border in particular.
And President Trump's not going to allow that. I don't think if the Supreme Court makes that tragic misstep.
I don't think they will, by the way. Right. I think they're going to rule at least 5-4, maybe 6-3 in favor of the president.
Well, I was going to mention that I was listening to Jenna Ellis's show this morning, and Steve Dace was on there.
We did.
I'm not sure which clip you have of Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve Dace talking to Jenna about his prediction of where justices, including Chief Justice John Roberts, particular issue. We can play it now, clip 6.
John Roberts is not an ideologue. He's an institutionalist. He views himself as the last man standing, defending America's institutions. And so if you're the Colorado State Supreme Court that thinks you can nullify an election before it happens, he steps in. And if you think you're the Biden administration that can use institutions to mass poison people to the point that they'll lose all of their trust in vaccines in the public health sector, he'll step in. He's against whoever he views as disrupting institutions. And I think at the very least, as the threat of this looms, I think you could actually see Roberts step in for fear that Trump would do this and therefore destroy the entire canard of Roberts' existence.
Yeah, I agreed with Steve Dace on this issue. And his point, he went on to explain further that if you push Donald Trump into a corner, Donald Trump is going to say, I'm the executive branch. And this is what Abraham Lincoln did. Mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln basically said, you want to stop me, judge? Go ahead and try. You don't have an army. Okay. And I think that's what Donald Trump would wind up doing. He would say to these federal judges,
I hope it didn't come to that.
And that would be
that's a constitutional crisis.
It is a constitutional crisis. We would complain if a president who is a Democrat did this.
Yeah.
So this would, and I think what Steve Dace is saying is that John Roberts is smart enough to see that that's what's going to result, and he's going to have to slap these judges down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Trump's going to say, well, forget it.
Otherwise, what you end up with, if you follow, it seems to me, if you follow these liberal federal judges and what they've ruled, it's an ACLU-type extreme position of every one of these deportees, is that what you would call them? Deportees?
Yeah.
Would be be given public attorneys and have their cases adjudicated from now till the Lord returns.
Mm-hmm. Right. Millions.
Individually.
Millions of people.
Yeah. It's just insane.
Right.
Again, if you are a U.S. citizen, I know you've explained to me before, Ed, and you're right that there are certain caveats to this. Sometimes non-citizens do have a right to their day in court, so to speak. But what we're talking about here is are non-citizens of the United States being granted all kind of, quote, constitutional rights that citizens have mm-hmm. and U.S. citizens have. And so, anyway, it would really, it would really tie the hands of the president if the Supreme Court were to agree with these lower courts. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. In the meantime, the overall issue here is that President Trump and his team, Tom Homan, Pam Bondi, Kash Patel, Kristi Noem, others, they are tirelessly at work trying to clean up our country, mm-hmm. clean up our streets from violent criminals. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me, I've seen surveys where people even in blue cities, Chicago, Boston, New York, for example, who vote Democrat, when asked, are you glad that President Trump is going after the bad guys on the streets? They say, yeah, we are. Deport them.
Yeah.
Huh? These are people who vote Democrat.
This has been hugely popular. And the fact that we've had 4 years of chaos.
Yes, we have.
Because of the Biden administration's policies. And to your point, giving 10 to 12 to 15, maybe 20 million people who came into this country illegally under Joe Biden, giving them all their day in court and saying, no, you've got to prove that this is a gang member.
Right.
And you can't check his tattoos. All right, that's absurd. The executive, the chief executive, the president should be able to say, while people who aren't citizens have many constitutional protections, if they're here legally,
right.
If you're here illegally, we can deport you no matter what we decide is a justifiable reason.
Right.
And the big news again today is Chris led off with the arrest in Northern Virginia of one of the top three leaders of the MS-13 gang, 24-year-old fella, and it's big national news.
Mm-hmm.
MS-13. I was going to say MSNBC, but they're another gang.
Another gang that should be deported.
They're also one of the worst of the worst. Fight that out.
They probably have tattoos too.
Yeah. All right. So,
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Rachel Maddow has been arrested today. And all right.
MSNBC tattoo, clearly visible.
We'll be back momentarily.
As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forth, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. What does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry. By rescuing, on average, 200 babies' lives a day, they are putting a serious dent into the abortion holocaust. But there are still thousands of babies who are slain daily, and Preborn's goal is to rescue them all. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all of these precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire Preborn network for an entire day. How many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God. Please join the cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Well, we have a guest right now, and he has quite an amazing story to tell, and it's featured in our latest magazine that we provide here at American Family Association in the March 2025 edition of The Stand. That's the name of the magazine. We have a feature on a gentleman, William Avery, and he, I called Bill and I talked to him on the phone a couple of days ago, and I said, why don't you come on the radio with me and tell your story? And he said, I'd be glad to. So good morning to you, Bill.
Well, good morning, Mr. Wallman, or Wildman.
Yeah.
It's really a pleasure on my part to be with you this morning.
Well, you're welcome, and call me Tim, okay?
Oh, all right,
please,
I can do that.
Please do that. I mean, I'm calling you Bill, and I don't even know you that well, and you're really William. So, but
yeah,
anyway.
Well, I've been called a lot of things at 92. I can handle that.
92 years old. You were 30, man, when I came into the world. That's amazing.
Oh.
And where do you live?
Well, I'm about 25 miles south of Battle Creek, Michigan, which is a good-sized city east of Kalamazoo by about 20 miles or 20 hours or 20 miles. I'll get it right here.
I got you. Well, listen, we've got your story here in our latest magazine. Why don't you take us back? And for our listeners who are hearing this for the first time, they haven't read the story in our magazine. Tell us your life story, if you would.
Well, I was born in St. Joseph, Missouri. Well, in the area, I really don't know where it was, but it was Missouri. And my family, it was really a miracle of sorts, because I didn't know anything until actually about 7 years ago, at 86 years old, but through all of this, I discovered that my mother, as a very young 15-year-old, was raped, and so I don't know the circumstances, but being 15, she was vulnerable, and I don't understand any of that, but But she didn't get an abortion. This is the most important part, I believe. And because of that, I lived. And but about 2 months before I was born, a young man came along and, excuse me, but anyway, he rescued her in a sense, and he married her about 2 months before I was born. And so the nice thing about that is that I didn't have to go, or he didn't have to go through an adoption or anything. He just assumed that I was his son. Of course, he knew the difference. And so here I am. My name is Avery, out of gratitude more than anything else.
That was your father, who was not your biological dad, obviously. That was his last name.
That's right.
Okay, Avery.
That's
right. Which you still carry with you today. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And then, but I went through life, and actually when I was 11, a breakup of the family went through and all kinds of things there that usually happen in those situations.
Your parents got divorced, right?
Yeah.
Sadly, got divorced. So I'm trying to fill in some of the, excuse me for interrupting, but your siblings were 9 and 7. So there was you, 11 years old, and your siblings 9 and 7, and your parents got divorced. And so, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I had a one-year-old sister as well.
Okay.
At that point in time. So, but through all this, finally, when I got out of high school, of course, I'd been through some other things there that pushed me into a farm life as a hired hand at 16. It was an experience I'll never forget, and I don't regret it. But the day started at 4 in the morning and usually ended at 8 o'clock at night. So, but I was paid handsomely for it. I was getting $15 a week.
Wow.
And but then when I graduated from high school, had no home or anything, and I left that farm, but I discovered I didn't have a birth certificate. And not only that, I couldn't find one. Nobody knew I was born. And so I lived my whole life without a birth certificate. And so I think it might have even helped keep me out of the draft. Not that I was trying to dodge it, but they didn't know I was here. And about 1964... things began to unfold for me. I was 31 at the time, and I realized that as much as I seemed to be drawn to God, I just wasn't responding very good. And so that's when I accepted Christ as my Savior. And as you were mentioning earlier, it was real, and I've trusted that ever since. So it's now been 61 years since that happened, and and the rest is history, but it's great.
We're talking to William Avery, 92 years old, from state of Michigan, telling us his life story. He was born as a result of his mother being raped at the age of 15, but she didn't get an abortion, obviously, which is why he's talking to us today. And he had a very difficult life for a lot of years. Bill did, and he's got, but I'm looking at a picture of you, Bill, and I tell you what, before I get to that, did you have a question for Bill?
I did. Bill, this is Ed. I do want to let our listeners know that Chris has posted this story, this article, on our Today's Issues Facebook page, and you can go to afa.net and click on the stand. And this issue will come up, and you can navigate towards this story. But one of the things that struck me, Bill, about your story is and Stacy Singh did a wonderful job writing this story about how you came to Christ. You spent your life, a good part of your life, hosting teenagers and doing ministry. But it says also that you feel like your greatest legacy is your family. And it mentions 4 children, a foster son, all married, 18 grandchildren, 10 of whom are married, 13 great-grandchildren. That's 50 people, most of whom would never have existed if Avery, born unwanted to the point of being abandoned, had had his life snuffed out with an abortion. That is an astonishing story about how important this pro-life issue is. Your family is now over 50 people, you said in this story, just because you lived.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, that was the focus, really, of a note that I sent to American Family back in the summer, and apparently Tim picked up on that, and they called me in December to feature it in the March issue. But, you know, one of the things that wasn't really very clear, I think, is that when the divorce occurred in 1944, actually, when I was 11, and eventually my mother, or our mother, abandoned us. And as a result of that, I became kind of the adult in the family until my dad, or our dad, discovered that we had been abandoned. And but then for the next almost 3 years, I really was a caregiver for my two brothers. And, you know, God knew what he was doing, because otherwise social services probably would have moved in and taken us away from our dad. And because, I mean, since when does an 11-year-old have this experience, right, and everything to manage some of the younger siblings? And so,
wow.
I managed to get through that in a very marvelous way, and a miracle way, you might say.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm grateful for all that experience, because it did help me in working with young people. I was a youth leader for over 30 years, and then I was unpaid. I was a volunteer, but you know, I took it serious. Then me and my wife, we also run a camp for young people that we handled 50 a week for 4 weeks in the summer. We did that for over 30 years. And I was motivated, I believe, by my experience of being a boy from a broken home, never had a mother after I was 11, you know, and kind of feel it even today. Mothers are important. I mean,
amen.
Extremely important. But yeah. When you don't have a benefit of growing up with them and having that nurturing spirit about their children, there's an absence there, and there's no way to fill it.
Yeah.
But for me, Christ did that, but I was 31 years old.
Yeah. We've been talking to William Avery, Bill, and his story is in our latest magazine. Quite a life story. He's 92 years old, lives in Michigan, well, listen, Bill, we thank you so much for being our guest this morning, and it's a beautiful picture of your family there in our magazine. Again, we posted that story at our Today's Issues Facebook page. And thank you for being our guest this morning, and thank you for supporting us here at American Family.
Well, I would like to close with this. Those grandchildren, they all spoil me rotten. I mean, every one of them.
Amen. And how many great-grandchildren do you have?
There's 13.
Wow. Do you know all their names?
And one on the way.
I'm just kidding. It's hard for me to keep up with my 11 grandchildren's names. Well, listen, Bill, by the way, is it springtime yet in Michigan?
Well, it's supposed to have happened on the 21st.
Oh, I got you. Officially, right? But anyway, it'll be warm soon enough. Listen, Bill, thanks so much. Thanks so much for being on our guest, and may God grant you many more years of health.
Well, hey, thank you very much. This is a very special moment for me, and to be cognizant enough to even carry on a conversation is wonderful.
Amen. Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it. That's Bill Avery joining us. Yeah.
I hope that if the Lord tarries, I can be that articulate
at 92.
At 92.
I know.
I would have guessed 60s.
Yes. I know.
I already look 92.
Yeah.
By the way, I do want to remind people, if you have Facebook, you can.
Yes.
Chris has graciously posted this article on our Facebook page. If you don't have Facebook, you can go to AFA.net, and there's a little tab at the top that says The Stand, and you want to choose the print version when you have the drop-down menu, and the March issue is located there. You may have to scroll through it a little bit to find this article, but it's titled The Amazing Life, Times, and Legacy of William Avery.
And the easiest way to make sure you get our magazine every month is by writing a check to us here at American Family Association, American Family Radio. A donation of any size gets you on our eternal mailing list, which you can never get off of.
It's not technically true. But
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
If they want it to be true, it will be true.
Right. But the way to get our monthly magazine, which is excellent, by the way, is simply make a financial donation to our ministry, American Family Association, American Family Radio. If people want to, if you're listening to me right now, you haven't made a donation to AFA and AFR, we're going to have our spring share-a-thon coming up in a couple of weeks, and that'd be a great time for you to make your first gift to us here and help us out, okay? Because we have to have, we're not like public radio or public television, which we're going to talk about later. Our existence is solely on the provision of, well, obviously God, but God's people making donations to our ministry. That's the only way we're able to be on the radio, be on the air. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Chris.
Well, I want to remind everybody that we need to continue being in prayer for storm victims, particularly Hurricane Helene victims over in North Carolina several months ago. 6 months ago or so, since that hurricane made landfall in that part of the country and caused...
But it didn't make landfall there.
Well, it made landfall in the south and then caused catastrophic flooding
in
North Carolina.
That was in September.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Now, I bring this up because I've got a couple of clips from a lady named Mona Roper. She was on Fox and Friends earlier today explaining the ongoing needs of North Carolinians. And even the voices there that are in support for doing things like ending FEMA... arguing the system is flawed and ultimately causing more harm to Americans here. I've got a couple of clips beginning of this one, clip 14.
It would be great to see changes. Samaritan's Purse has been great here in the community, but the FEMA has not. We still have a lot of people lacking FEMA support. I'm lacking FEMA support myself. And it's just something that I think to do away with FEMA, as she's speaking, is absolutely the correct way that they should proceed. I don't think the system is capable of being revamped. Mm-hmm. There's just so many loopholes and no one knowing exactly what they're supposed to do. It seems in the FEMA organization that it is causing the people who are desperately in need of help to suffer even more.
Now, I bring this up for a couple of reasons. Number one, to put it back out there and remind people that these folks are still dealing with loss. But also, unfortunately, news media do things like time and other issues that do pop up. A lot of people, when you don't hear about this in the news, you don't realize it's still an issue. So I'm trying to bring it back up into a show called Today's Issues.
Heard the interview this morning. Do you know there are people still living in tents? They have spent the winter in tents because they have no housing. She was talking about bridges still being out. They can't get to the site of their houses. Now this is 6 or 7 months into this, and there's no excuse for this, no excuse.
The comments about the FEMA agency being and the system being broken, I think is valid. I mean, we've all heard stories. All I did was search for FEMA empty trailers, And there are still stories about unused FEMA trailers seen in Prattville landfall landfill. Okay, and we all know that, I think it was during Katrina and other times, these, you know, all these trailers that FEMA purchases, mm-hmm. and then for some reason has no ability to get to people. So I certainly appreciate the impulse on the part of a lot of Americans to say, yeah, we need, as a people, to help individuals when they get in trouble. We kind of pool our resources and get them help. But if they're not getting help, like yeah. which is the case after Hurricane Helene, it devastated parts of North Carolina, then why do we have FEMA?
Yeah.
I mean, if they're incapable of doing what private Christian organizations are able to do, 8 Days of Hope and then Samaritan's Purse and others, they're able to get in.
Yeah.
So why can't the federal government? I think for a lot of Americans, this is just a federal boondoggle.
I should know the answer to this question, being a reporter. But, like, I've never lived in an America without a FEMA. It was started in 1979, much like Department of Ed. So, obviously, there was a day not that long ago when we had, you know, something. FEMA didn't exist. What did we do after, like, Hurricane Camille or something from the 70s?
I think what happened was the president would declare an area to be a national emergency, put in a state of emergency. A governor would do the same thing. And then federal tax dollars would flow to the state, and then the state would handle getting the supplies needed to the individuals who are in trouble. I think that was what used to happen before FEMA. But FEMA now, as federal agencies often do, they come in and they say, hey, we got it. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't got it, to use
next story, Chris. English.
Have you guys ever been on a plane that turned around? Like,
no.
Somebody forgot
like
something.
On a tarmac or something?
No, like they've already left the airport. They're in the air. They've been in the air for a while. And then you get an announcement.
And then someone acts up. And
attention, passengers, we're turning this plane around. Something like that.
I know. I've just read or seen.
Well, interestingly enough, it happened.
Have you?
No, it has not happened to me, but it happened to a lot of people on a U.S. On a United Airlines Boeing flight from L.A. to Shanghai over the weekend.
Shit, where, Chris?
They were
L.A. to Shanghai.
They were Shanghaied.
Yes, I see what you did there.
Is that is that the name of the?
It is
China.
Yes,
Shanghai. Right.
Well, it's going specifically to Shanghai. An L.A. to Shanghai flight had to turn around last weekend after it was discovered one of the pilots had taken off without his passport. They were in the air for a couple of hours when they had to make the announcement to a plane full of passengers that we're turning this thing around.
No, if I'm one of the passengers, I'd say, hey, you can just use mine. Just stand behind me, a couple people, and I'll slip it back to you, okay? But we ain't going back.
He didn't have his passport.
He didn't have his passport. About 2 hours later, the plane turned around and was redirected to San Francisco.
Did he tell them that? Did he tell the passengers that?
Yes. They took off from L.A. en route to Shanghai, which is a place in China.
I think it's Shanghai.
Shanghai. Well,
yeah, you got close, though. Yeah.
Shanghai.
There you go. It was redirected to San Francisco, where it was landed around 5 p.m. local time. The pilot didn't have the passport on board, they told the passengers.
It's not a good look for United Airlines.
No. Well, at least it wasn't like a mechanical problem.
This is where it's probably helpful. If the pilot does the voice where you can't understand what he's saying, which is we've all heard that every other time I get on an airplane, this is Captain John and the front deck, Josh. Okay, yeah, we're going over Chicago, and then we'll be chumming on
mechanical.
We should have some weather problems over North Dakota. And have a safe trip, everybody.
Yeah,
that's what he needs to do. I'm not,
rapid fire.
So, hello, this is Captain John, and you're not gonna believe this, people. I left my passport back in Los Angeles.
Captain John is now flying a Cessna.
I am so sorry, but that if you're wondering why we're turning around, I got to go back and get that thing. I know right where I left it. It was right at Five Guys. Yeah. I had a burger bag waiting on me. They called our flight.
Yeah.
So and then he says, give me a second when I get off the plane. I'll be right back.
And then he says, and we're going to look back at this one day and all laugh at this.
So It took off from L.A. en route to this place in China that I've mispronounced twice.
That's all right.
And then they turned around after 2 hours. They went to San Francisco, where they had a team of pilots waiting. They did have passports. Meanwhile, the passengers, 257 passengers on board, they received 2 meal vouchers totaling $30.
Now, you know what you do right there?
Oh, man.
What you do right there, honestly. if you're the pilot and you discover you left your passport, my first question is, you need to be paying attention to flying, not going through your pockets. Okay. All right. But the second thing here is you go ahead and fly and land and then you deal with the fact that you don't have your passport.
Since it is in China and how strict they are, even in Shanghai.
Yeah. That's Ed mocking you, Chris, not me.
I think they probably would. They might arrest the guy. It might be that serious. Yeah. You entered. Here's a country that does it.
They don't play.
That way. You landed here illegally.
Straight to jail.
Anyway.
I'm not sure what
that was. That was a very costly mistake, too. Do you realize how much fuel was spent?
2 hours.
Take off, go out over the ocean, and then come back.
Because it's 2 hours out, 2 hours back, then 2 hours back towards China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking $20,000, $25,000 worth of fuel.
Okay. Can you imagine the pilot talking to the flight attendant? Hey, come here a second. Listen, can you go tell everybody that we had one of the pilots leave their passport?
I would say to the flight attendant, I'll give you $200 if you say it was you.
Right. 200, you got 2,000, might do it, not 200.
Wow.
All right. So thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We shall take a short time out right here and be back with more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.